The Congo government called for aid. Congo asked Ghana for help and also wisely called in the United Nations. From this point, distinguished delegates, you are more than conversant with the story, and there is no need for me to dwell in detail on the facts.
Which we'll get back to in this. Extra, extra, Mouse Report listeners, take note that Jared Kushner's private business dealings, which included an attempted shakedown of the Qatar Investment Authority to purchase a half a billion stake in the practically bankrupt Kushner building at 666 Fifth Avenue in Manhattan, led to the placement of Qatar on a list of nations Trump administration considers to be supporting terrorism. Only the intervention of the Pentagon, which maintains a large military base at Al Udeid in Qatar, saved Qatar from being subjected to crippling U.S. sanctions. Kushner also sought investors for his white elephant in Manhattan from Saudi Arabia, Qatar, China, South Korea, Israel, and France, all to no avail. However, Kushner may have recently found someone willing to invest in 666 Fifth Avenue. Kushner companies recently announced they were negotiating to buy the 49.5% stake in the building from Vornado Realty Trust. Vornado owns 70% of 555 California Street in San Francisco, with the other 30% owned by Donald Trump. The U.S. ambassador to Israel, former Trump bankruptcy attorney David Friedman, and Trump's special envoy to the Middle East, Jason Greenblatt, the Trump Organization's former chief legal officer, Trump Organization is capitalized, so I think it's a company or something, continue to share sensitive classified intelligence with Jared Kushner. It was Israeli influence over Kushner that helped lead to Trump's ill-advised decision to move the U.S. embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. U.S. intelligence sources also believe that Kushner, Friedman, and Greenblatt are funneling U.S. intelligence to Las Vegas casino tycoon Sheldon Adelson, a chief financier of Trump's political campaign coffers and a close ally of Israel's scandal-plagued Netanyahu. Anyway. Friedman represents another leaky sieve ambassador to Israel for sensitive U.S. intelligence being illegally handed over to the Israelis. Martin Indyk, I-N-D-Y-K, Bill Clinton's ambassador to Israel, lost his security clearance after it was discovered he was transmitting classified information, including cryptographic material, to the Israeli government. It was the first and only time a U.S. ambassador ever lost his security clearance. Kushner has been a dream come true for Israel. Trump has carried out numerous Israeli wishes, including decertification of the P5+1 Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, JCPOA, with Iran over its nuclear power program, supporting the Saudi actions against Qatar and Yemen, cutting off direct U.S. aid to the Palestinian Authority and to the United Nations Relief and Works Agency, UNWRA, which assists Palestinian refugees, continuation of support to Israeli-backed jihadist rebel groups battling Syrian President Bashar al-Assad, support for pro-Israeli Egyptian President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi's economic blockade of the Hamas government of Gaza, and freezing security assistance to Pakistan for Israel. Kushner, the Trumps, Friedman, and Greenblatt are like Hanukkah gifts coming not for 8 successive days, but for 365 days a year. Thank you, Wade Manson. That's from the Intrepid Report. Oh, here's some more from False Flag Weekly News.
Was big time this week. We have this Kushner getting $500 million in loans after meetings in his official White House capacity. He's trying to refinance a mortgage on a Chicago skyscraper, and he's really screwed over 666 Park Avenue, New York. What an address, and what a disaster for the Kushners. They bought it in 2007, right before the real estate collapse, and they've been desperately trying to figure out a way to bail themselves out ever since. And it all coming due this year. It was a 10-year kind of security situation. And so it looks like Kushner was really happy that Trump got elected, because now he can run around the world strong-arming everybody with money to try and give him something, bail him out.
Yes, we need George W. Bush to come back and call the emoluments clause just a GD piece of paper again, because that's clearly what's going on, enrichment through the office. But this is also – there's clearly pieces of this that represent potential blackmail. And I think it was the story about the UAE, Mexico, Israel, and China, I believe, as countries that were knowingly and willfully using Kushner's vulnerability financially to leverage him.
And there was a great article by Wayne Madsen on Chabad inside the White House. This Chabad weird, you know, Jewish Zionist group that's got secret society headquarters built all over the place. They're apparently really big with the Russian mob. And people like Felix Sater, a Russian mobster who's been headquartered in Trump Tower pretty much forever, and Tevfik Arif, another Chabad guy who has been charged with running a sex slave prostitution ring, various very unsavory international criminals, all headquartered in Trump Tower, and Kushner is in bed with all of them. So this Madsen article, I thought, was more great work from Wayne.
Yes, this is, of course, what's not being talked about in the midst of the Russiagate story. Is this is actually Chabadgate. That would be maybe a more core and accurate way to talk about this. And in the midst of the endless, still like a week later, the harping on by everybody from Chabad-connected Ari Fleischer. People should go look at a Christopher Bolin article about Ari Fleischer and Chabad and his brother, to the so-called left, such as Jake Tapper at CNN, just endlessly bitching and whining about Farrakhan and how everybody who was in a room with Farrakhan at some point needs to disown him.
I'll disown him, but I like never owned him to begin with. But the four lies of Iran-Contra, this is from Ronald Reagan, the horrible 80s. I did not tell, which was the result of the October surprise coup that started in 78 with the ambassador sending a memo. The Shah thinks there's an opposition rally because Margaret Thatcher, George Herbert Walker Bush, and Ronald Reagan were in Tehran setting up these this ridiculous costume party going on. Because the military was told to stand down. We needed our, the poison pill of that kind of... Well, anyway, I'm running off to the rails here.
What we need to look at is... I was trying to look for this pamphlet by Allison Weir put out about Rabbi Schneerson, the modern Rebbe of Chabad, and the massive supremacist, the Judeo-supremacist and ethno-supremacist statements that he's made.
Let me make the universal condemnation of this. Thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's wife, but it doesn't say or husband, because it doesn't even address. It's like the it's because they're talking about the Jewish, and I'm saying no, it's all Abrahamic, you know, Christian, Muslim, Jew. It's all part of the same misogyny. Never mind.
In Hebrew, they weren't probably made for an English speaking audience back at home, but they have been translated. And they should be looked into. And I believe everybody who is involved with Chabad.
But the point was, okay, the four lies of Iran-Contra. Ronald Reagan said, I did not tell a lie. I did not trade arms for hostages. I did not use a third country. And Israel was not involved. Of course, Israel was involved, period, in the Contra death squad campaign, assassination campaign against Nicaragua in the 80s that I lived through.
Should be required to disown those statements. Plus, there's this whole intelligence scenario behind it, where it's been acknowledged by elements inside Mossad that Chabad is basically the religious overseers or the religious godfathers of Israeli intelligence.
Indeed. And, you know, so Kushner's in bed with his group, And he's running around scaring up money to bail himself out on 666 Park Avenue. And that may have almost pushed the Middle East into war, because he went to Qatar asking for money. They turned him down. And the next thing you know, he and his Saudi buddies are practically declaring war on Qatar, imposing.
Okay, so here's what's on the screen. Allegation that Kushner punished Qatar for not investing in real estate deal resurfaces in Mueller probe. Qatari government officials who visited the United States earlier this year considered turning over information to Mueller, but have since decided not to cooperate, reports NBC News. Okay. Back to false flag Luke News for 3/9/18.
Using a boycott that came very, very close to lighting a bonfire in the Middle East. All to bail out 666 Park Avenue.
This is wild. This is beyond anything that we've ever seen in terms of the blatant mob. This is government by mob in many ways. And of course, Kushner's dad, Charles, who is involved very closely in the 9/11 real estate apparatus and context, plus was put in prison for fraud of some sort, and also was involved in Israeli intelligence operations at the highest levels of the New Jersey state government, I believe, is back in the mix and is trying to make deals, and on the back of his son's apparent access to intelligence reports at the highest level of the U.S. government. And Chabad is also in the mix in all of this Kushner greasy-ish, as Bannon called it, with the billionaire Israeli diamond dealers, and Lev Levayev, who is the biggest global backer and materially of Chabad, and his company was a key deal maker in one of the Kushner Manhattan real estate projects. So this is an intelligence, this is a high level national security threat. And if there are any patriots close to the situation, I imagine that they're trying to figure out a way how to deal with this.
So actually, part of the deep state that's unhappy with Trump and his associates, actually, you know, they have a point. You can't completely blame them. In the next slide, we have this Slate article. These are articles from relatively mainstream outlets. The last one was Haaretz. This is Slate on Kushner. And again, it adds more dots to connect, more pieces to the puzzle about how in December, just before Trump took office, there were not last December, but December of 2016, there was this furious flurry of activity involving Kushner, oil money. Flynn was involved going through Russia and touching on Qatar and so on and so forth. So now this is really the stuff that should be focused on. And it's good to see that they're at least, you know, publishing something about it. And the point of this article was that it lends credence to the Steele dossier, which is at the heart of this so-called Trump-Russia investigation. We have a new article from Boing Boing on the second Steele memo that says the Kremlin blocked Romney from becoming Secretary of State. This memo, actually, its existence was revealed for the first time to me anyway, and to most of my listeners, on my radio show by Barbara Honegger. Who this was a month and a half, 2 months ago, I think. So it gets curiouser and curiouser. Jeremy, do you think this is going to lead to Trump getting impeached or what?
Well, we'll see. I do think some people are going to be going to jail. They're definitely being rooted out of the White House over time here, and people have obviously been indicted. And this article, I believe, is based on some of the new reporting by Jane Mayer at The New Yorker, talking about, and actually, this is actually maybe one of the things we could thank the Russians in relationship to aspects of their Manchurian relationship with Trump, although we know
no Russia.
They basically saved us from Secretary of State Romney, if this is true.
Yeah, you know, I think we should just like throw Trump out and bring Putin in as the president of the USA. I think that would be a promotion for Putin. The USA has a bigger GDP than Russia, and we would benefit tremendously from that exchange. We should trade Trump to Russia.
I'm not sure we would. I would maybe more propose something like a Catherine Austin Fitz, Cynthia Ann McKinney
team
for president in 2020. And plus, Putin's got way too many close connections to Chabad and the Rothschilds through this Oleg Deripaska guy. But people should go read through this New Yorker article. Well, yeah, at least he's not just asset stripping Russia like the Harvard boys did. And apparently the Koch Harvard consensus in neoliberal 21st century America is in terms of asset stripping the United States of America and just using us as a globalist thug on behalf of Zionist expansionism. Yeah, that clearly that would be a less bad choice in many ways. But there is this a depth behind some of these documents that people need to go look back into. This includes things like what you were covering with Barbara Honegger, where Dianne Feinstein released the interview with the Fusion GPS co-founder Glenn Simpson. He even talks about a lot of the Russian Jewish mob aspects and Putin's interest in ultra-Orthodox Chabad networks in terms of influence operations. And of course, the missing piece in almost all of this mainstream reporting is the Israel connection, that in many ways you can see this as a Netanyahu-Likud leverage point using the aspects of Russia and Russian intelligence and the Russian Jewish mob deep state aspects as basically a cutout and a credible cover for Israeli operations in many ways. At the same time, my hope, and I think there are some indicators here, is that there is potentially third force here, potentially some actual real U.S. Patriots in the mix here that are not interested in Netanyahu nor Putin being in the driver's seat.
Well, if we're going to trade Trump to Russia for Putin, we better hurry up and do it before he loses all of his value, which could happen soon, as the special counsel is supposedly sort of getting closer and closer to Trump himself, according to this mainstream reporting. There is a point of view in among alternative commentators that this is all ginned up to stop the Make America Great Again agenda. Paul Craig Roberts came on my show and made that point the other day. And that's going to be Monday's radio show here at No Lies Radio. It's already up as a YouTube. Jeremy, do you think Paul Craig Roberts is getting this right? Three-quarters right, half right, or totally
no.
wrong?
Totally I'd say wrong. He's getting it to 20% right.
Okay.
The name of Paul Craig Roberts is that he's actually sort of maybe retreated into polemics rather than actually dealing with the totality of the facts here, which the open source facts about the Trump background of the Cohn, Lansky, CIA, Mossad mob background is already very, very clear on the record. But more and more, we're seeing that this Russiagate is not a nothing burger, as Van Jones termed it.
Well, fully on you, but before I go back up to the mountains with my lion and Sasquatch and bear friends.
Whenever I need to leave it all behind, I feel the need to get away. I find a quiet place, far from the human race, out in the country, before the breathing air is gone, before the sun is just a bright spot in the nighttime, up where the rivers like to run, I stand alone, I take back something.
So, and I talked about Iran-Contra, blah, 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 and the horrible 80s. That was the Contra War that drove me out of the mountains where I used to live 24-7, you know, like winter, summer, spring, fall. Obviously not in that order, but okay, back to horrible bad news.
Through another CNP outlet, Project So-Called Veritas, basically. And we need to look into the actual nature of the documents. Greg McCarron and I, about a month ago, we did a program about the Nunes memo and the GPS fusion transcript. And people should actually read the documents, see if this is actually just all a nothing burger. It's not. What the mainstream media is actually covering up, again, is the Netanyahu Yahoo angle, and that all these guys who are involved in clearly in this negotiations around Rosneft and in the Middle East, UAE, Qatar, in relationship to some aspect of Russia, whether it's Flynn or Eric Prince, also have direct ties to Israeli intelligence. Prince worked directly with Netanyahu's now indicted chief of staff.
And Netanyahu, Bibi just popped up, kind of becoming a major player. Remember Ariel Sharon and Habaika, or there's this guy they were closing in on, and he died, and Sharon from the Sabra Tilla massacre. But 95, Eagle Amir's roommate told his army commander that the assassin was going to kill Yitzhak Rabin. And so that 95 assassination was a, it was a military coup against the front person. And Mr. Bill Clinton, the Poppy Bush, Mina, Arkansas, coke stand attendant in the Guns for Drugs episode of the Endless Contra War, was at the controls. So, you know, Clinton begets, drone bomber has her on as his secretary of state, as Trump had her at his wedding. So it's like a bipartisan Contra War that I've spent most of my life waking up looking down the rails of.
Prince worked for the, I think it's called NSO, the Unit 8200 founded cyber warfare technology company that has been used to attack activists worldwide. So this is the angle. Part of the Russiagate story is really an Israelgate story, as we actually found out from the original Mueller indictment regarding Kushner using influence in relationship to Russia to tamp down the condemnation of Israel in the UN.
Mm-hmm. Well, Paul Craig Roberts has done fantastic work, and he's very courageously stood up on 9/11 and called the official story an obvious pack of lies. He hasn't gone all the way in terms of digging into who did it and why, in my opinion. And I think he also hasn't gone all the way in digging up some of this information that you're referring to, Jeremy. But people can listen, read his piece, listen to the show, see what you think, make up your own mind.
But as far as I'm concerned, talking about Putin, okay, we saw where he was in the real world when he had Bandar Bush, so-called Bandar bin Sultan, whatever his name is, the Saudi death squad murder boss, threatened Russia at the Winter Olympics if Saudi Arabia got any flack from Russia. And then Putin let the guy walk out, when he had him under, or he was busted, basically, before the world for, what is Title 18, Section 11, 16, 11, 17, conspiracy to murder internationally protected persons. If the U.S. harbors people to do that, other countries will do the same. And so it's just a safer world if we don't want to invite our politicians that we go into a booth and pretend to appoint assassinated, as is in the Contra War. And so that all has to be kept under the table. But anyway, Putin was in the FSB, Federal Security Bureau, when the KGB, the Russian cloak dagger business, was blowing up apartments in Moscow. And in Ryazan, the fifth of those did not go off because of a guard who saw the paper taped over the license, and the blonde waved her FSB, obviously not a Chechen. And so that false flag, and incidentally, the hexagen was the same substance used to propel the gas poison in these false flag gas attacks. The media has been bombarding our ears with gas attacks against Syria. But anyway, blah, blah, blah.
In 2006, Paul Craig Roberts' articles about 9/11 were some of the most important work out there in terms of a Reaganite basically being like, not only is the Bush administration lying about Iraq, they're lying big time about September 11th and going there with the trade towers. But 10 years later, he still hasn't developed a theory about who did it and why.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I think that there's a limit to how far you can go in some of these areas when you have a major, reputation or major audience. We see different people stopping at different levels. He's a good friend of Patrick Buchanan. And Patrick Buchanan came on my show and said, you know, Kevin, I just can't believe that Dick Cheney would do what you're telling me he did. So that's like one step way, many steps behind Paul Craig Roberts. And I, yeah. I still think Paul Craig Roberts is a very important voice, and his spirited defense of Trump, people should check it out and see what they think. But in any case, whatever you think about, you know, whether how much of a burger there is in Russiagate, the United States government worrying about Russia buying a few Facebook ads and so on. Look at what, I mean, we've been overthrowing dozens and dozens and dozens of governments interfering in elections. That word interfering.
It's only necessary to say that something has happened in the Congo, which has justified my constant warning to the African countries to be on their guard against what I call clientele sovereignty or fake independence by the metropolitan power with the concealed intention of making the liberation.
And this is that we find ourselves in Africa today with the recent developments, not only with the murder and assassination of Gaddafi, but the entrance of troops and bases from the United States and France, not only in East Africa, but even more so in the countries of the Sahel, the countries of Niger, the countries of Mali. Listen to the voice of Dr. Kwame Nkrumah. He is speaking in 1960. He is bravely speaking at the time that these events are going on in the Congo. And he's talking about the fact that despite the United Nations being called in to protect the legitimate prime minister and the president, that the United Nations is working on the side of the Belgium with the complicity of the United States, with the complicity of Belgium, with the complicity of the United Nations.
And so the United Nations has been the forefront of this contra war against Syria, and contra war, that's where I came in, wasn't it?
Whenever I feel the closing in on me, I need a bit of room to move. When life becomes too fast, I find relief at last, out in the car.
Doesn't even begin to describe what the United States government does every day as a matter of national policy.
Go look at James Woolsey on Fox News smirking about CIA long-term involvement. And we've always done it for their own good. And
we're the good guys. It's okay if we do it.
Yeah. I mean, this is really, of course, this is where the Russiagate aspect is very much being weaponized in an intense fashion by the corporatist media to basically try to avoid self-reflection. Self-criticism. We have our, and of course, do you think that the CIA's meddling stops at the shores of the United States of America? No, they team up with the worst foreign influence in terms of Israel to probably sabotage all kinds of aspects of our domestic politics.
We get covert CIA candidates. We've had, George H.W. Bush had been a major player in the JFK assassination on the part of the CIA, and then he ran for president and didn't even tell us about his CIA background and lied about being in Dallas and lied about an FBI memo referring to him being part of the disinformation around the JFK assassination. Bill Clinton was involved in CIA drug smuggling through MENA, Arkansas, never mentioned that anywhere. George W. Bush was, of course, from a CIA-connected family. Nobody ever mentioned that. And then Obama, his first job out of college was with the CIA. So talk about the CIA overthrowing governments and meddling in elections. The first place we need to throw them out of is the United States of America. So now let's get back to our favorite other topic, Israel here. The Entebbe false flag, 7 days in Entebbe, an exciting action thriller coming soon to a theater near you. It will never mention, next slide is that Bibi's brother Jonathan was killed there. Maybe Bibi named his 9/11 sponsoring institute the Jonathan Institute. That's the think tank that created the whole war on terror back in 1979, because he felt guilty about this false flag that he had been part of planning and his brother died in. It was a false flag, as we see in the next slide. The Israeli media even admits a British government document states flat out that Israel created this Entebbe hijacking operation.
And it says, British document, Israel initiated Entebbe hijack. Official government file quotes unnamed sources claiming Shin Bet cooperated with Air France flight hijackers PFLP group in instigating crisis in bid to weaken PLO. Ynet published 6107. The state of Israel was behind the hijacking of an Air France plane to Entebbe in 1976 and cooperated with the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine in staging the affair. A UK government file compiled at the time of the occurrence and published by the BBC Friday revealed, according to the file released by the National Archives, an unnamed contact told a British diplomat in Paris that the Shin Bet and the PFLP collaborated to seize the plane, which was hijacked in Athens and flown to Entebbe in Uganda, where 98, most of them Israelis, were held hostage. The crisis was brought to an end after Israeli commandos stormed the airport. Three Israeli hostages and one Israeli commander, Yonatan Netanyahu, were killed during the raid. In the document written on 30th of June 1976, when the crisis was still unresolved, D.H. Colvin of the Paris Embassy wrote that, according to his source, the hijack was the work of the PFLP with the help from the Israeli Secret Service, the Shin Bet. Back to False Flag Weekly News.
Wow. This is not in the film, I guess. But I think you're right. It may be the case that Benjamin Netanyahu is himself a victim of Zionist terrorism in terms of his family. And this explains some things also in relationship to how sociopathic he is and how he's doubling down on terrorism against the people of the world. And this is very, very telling. I think it's going to turn out in history that almost every single major terrorist aspect that Israel sort of pointed at as some type of attack on them or on Jewish people, almost all of them are probably going to be turned out to have been some type of Israeli intelligence operation.
That's right. False flags galore. Israel is the greatest producer of false flags.
I just thought that the commentary, the editorial commentary by Gordon Duff saying that this was some type of Russian intelligence message to the world and to the U.S. and Israel was very interesting. I thought that that was a different type of an escalation of the rhetoric in some way in terms of basically a desire to stand down the potential inflammation in this area.
That's possible. I'm not sure the Saker is much of an insider anymore regarding the Russian government, but
the facts that we know of in the murder of DNC staffer Seth Rich was that he was gunned down blocks from his home on July 10, 2016. Washington Metro Police detectives claim Mr. Rich was a robbery victim, which is strange since after being shot twice in the back, he was still wearing a $2,000 gold necklace. And watch, he still had his wallet, key, and phone. Clearly, he was not a victim of a robbery. This has all the earmarks of a targeted hit job. However, strangely, no one has been charged with this horrific crime. What is even more intriguing is no law enforcement agency is even investigating this murder. According to other open sources, Metro Police were told by their higher-ups that if they spoke about the case, they will be immediately terminated. It has been claimed that this order came down from the very high up the food chain, well beyond the DC. I don't know, director of command or whatever. DC mayor. But that, along with the October 19, 2015 Stacey DeBungee murder by the Thunder Bay police, because when you immediately announce the absence of a crime when you got the deathbed conviction from the killer, and he was an indigenous person, that was part of that genocide, and the United States is part of this genocide. So both need to be commented on in a note to the special rapporteur on such things. There's several. The DJ Mouse was going to, along with Brian Wilson, Duncan Murphy, we were going to get the UN the special rapporteur makes up a report, it's a fancy word for a reporter, to the UN about a crime, and the Contra war against Nicaragua was still going on when they finally elected a Contra, and then it didn't make sense to continue a war when we had basically won. So that's what I'm talking about. And never mind. Convention Against Torture, the Convention Against Racial Discrimination, certainly be one that the city of Berkeley needs to send regarding that they have updated their, they have instructed their chief of police to monitor any Thunder Bay police who enter the territory of the city of Berkeley so that they are not complicit with the genocide that the United States of America is wedded to evil from its birth about. Let me go to LBJ Murders Malcolm 50 Years On. Became one of Malcolm's security guards. Although Gene Roberts reported daily to the New York police and through them the FBI, he would before long begin to be won over by Malcolm. Malcolm was converted to a vision he described as the Brotherhood, the people of all races, colors from all over the world coming together as one, he said. It has proved to me the power of the one God. It also deepened his conviction that the earth's most explosive and pernicious evil is racism, the inability of God's creatures to live as one, especially in the Western world. In May 64, the five men who would kill Malcolm 9 months later came together for the first time, according to the confession of one of them, Talmadge Hayer. But back to the internationalism of Malcolm, I don't know if he's a cleric, but Sudanese man Mohammed Mahmoud Taha in 1985 was executed by the Numeri government, the U.S.-supported military, for refusing to adopt state Islam. And before that execution, I had a letter from my congressman, Norm Shumway, saying or claiming that even the President of the United States could not stop an execution decreed by a foreign government, never mind that he's the one that's given all that money to impose that form of barbarity anybody that takes U.S. government money is probably part of So, right, post the WTC Pentabomb mine fork operation, Sudan has been split in two, but Sudan was notable among the list of countries, Afghanistan, Iraq, Libya, Syria, to be destroyed in these false flag wars on our Contra Death Squad Takfiris that we had sent to bust up any socialist republic. They're not all busted up. The Syrian government stands in Damascus in spite of the ongoing. Imagine that all the countries in the Western well, imagine the anti-colonial countries arming Nazis in the suburbs of Maryland that had been held for years and were, you know, artillery killing people, specifically well-targeted assassinations from this five-year-old, you know, Nazi with tens of thousands of soldiers dug underground like we have around Damascus, and then you're talking about any kind of military response and not the military attack to begin that necessitates it, that brings out the worst in anybody. I mean, ask the Yahis. They had a council on whether they could point deer bows at our kind, and we are living in their footsteps after.
They belong to the Nation of Islam, Mosque number 25 in Newark. Two of the men, Benjamin Thomas and Leon Davis, said word was out that Malcolm X should be killed. Ben Thomas, assistant secretary of the Newark Mosque, was in the Nation of Islam's direct chain of command below Elijah Muhammad and the FBI's assets in the Chicago office. That summer, Martin Luther King and Malcolm X tried to meet again. FBI agents wiretapped a Malcolm phone call in which they learned that King's attorney, Clarence Jones, left a message for Malcolm. Jones said, Reverend King would like to meet as soon as possible on the idea of getting a human rights declaration.
And just to pick up on the whole point, Muhammad Mahmoud Taha was notable in promoting the freedom of women to be leaders in Sudan. I should have had some more of that material to segue in that direction. But
in the 12 days before Malcolm departed on a long trip to Africa, he and King were unable to meet. However, the FBI knew through its electronic surveillance that Malcolm and Martin were hoping to connect on the human rights issue that could put the United Nations on trial in the United Nations. Excuse me, that could put the United States on trial in the United Nations.
There's the
appearance on RT's Crosstalk. Oh, and guess what? The professor that is linked to the Papadopoulos Alexander Downer drunken conversation that's hearsay and gossip. That professor who is said to have told Papadopoulos that he would give dirt on Hillary, that professor has literally gone missing. That is also a huge deal. So the professor who is a key part of that whole story has gone missing. ...and see for information to corroborate the Steele dossier, which was complete, utter hearsay out of, you know, compassion. That is a threatening statement. If you disagree with me, if you continue to... And Kushner there's nothing that Kushner... Unverifiable. That's actually a quote from the BuzzFeed article when they first published the Trump-Russia dossier. Oh, and guess what? The professor that is linked to the Papadopoulos Alexander Downer drunken conversation that's hearsay and gossip... That professor who is said to have told Papadopoulos that he would give dirt on Hillary, that professor has literally gone missing.
What they're talking about here in the NSA assassination leaks Greenwald 514 story from RT
American investigative journalists Jeremy Scahill and Glenn Greenwald say they have teamed up to prepare a report on the National Security Agency's role in what one of them described as the U.S. assassination program. The connection between war and surveillance are clear. I don't want to give too much away, but Glenn and I are working on a project right now that has at its center how the National Security Agency plays a significant central role in the U.S. assassination program, unquote. Scahill said in Rio de Janeiro, cited by Associated Press. And then he takes a quarter of $1 billion or something from Midyar, the guy that was central to that hit on Reuters by cutting off the press that released the video of the laughing demons begging everybody to wipe the United States off the map by murdering people on the pretext that our puppet in Iraq had something to do with the NORAD stand down, the thermite demolitions after the drone strikes, that blah, 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 blah.
So, more war on Syria news here. The diplomatic plan to partition Syria has been leaked by the Lebanese newspaper Al-Akhbar. And that's really not much of a surprise, is it? This partition plan harks back to the Yanon plan and other plans to bust up these countries.
Yes, and this is also what people maybe didn't quite understand about the Syria operation, is that in the clean break document, it doesn't call for a regime change as directly as it called for a regime change in Iraq and overthrowing Saddam Hussein. It actually calls for a rollback and also the ability for the Israelis to go in and hit targets in Syria. And this is what we've seen, including the way that the false flag in Ghouta was used to take away the Assyrian chemical weapon deterrent. And now that there's a push for this a breakup plan, that the hard line is for trying to take Assad out, but the negotiated diplomatic plan is probably something like a breaking up of the country into three parts.
And the biggest winner from that is Israel. We heard from IFP News this week that Israel actually has a written security agreement with the Al-Nusra Front, that is Al-Qaeda. A written security agreement with Al-Qaeda. It doesn't surprise me that much, but I'm sure many Americans would be surprised.
Well, people should go back and look
at it. It was
a
stunning announcement. Stunning
Al-Qaeda.
Because of what was said.
Fugnini was last Tasmania, like Ishii was last Yahini.
There's a wrong train going nowhere. Roads are cut, lines are down. We'll be staying at the Roma bar till that monsoon passes on. The backbone of this country's broken. The land is cracked and the land is sold. Farmers are hanging on by their fingertips. We're cursed and stumbled across that shore. What for? You know where. treadmill mate. I hope you're not beaten yet.
Of Defense, James Mattis, says there is no evidence that the Syrian government used sarin gas on its own people. And this is a narrative we've been pushing back on for years. So what does this mean for U.S. policy in Syria? And will President Trump continue to push for war in Syria, or will he return to the positions of candidate Trump, who said the U.S. should stay out of it? Let's give it a reality check you won't get anywhere
else. Final speaker tonight is arguably one of the foremost journalists when it comes to the reporting on the Syrian conflict. Vanessa Beely has travelled extensively throughout Syria, risking life and limb to bring back the voices of the Syrian people from all walks of life, from high-ranking members of public office to the heroes of the real Syrian civil defence. Vanessa, just...
Why are some children approved by the Western media and others ignored or airbrushed from our view? In fact, this slide should have started for some reason with the pictures of Omran. Their voices are muted beneath the din of propaganda that calls for the war to save the children with names. We're being told what to believe. We're being told that the villain of this war are the Syrian government, the Syrian army, and Syria's allies. Only those narratives and those names that fit with the narrative are amplified. And this is a case of egregious misdirection, misinformation, and distortion of the complexity of this conflict and the true instigators behind the universal suffering of the children of Syria. In this picture, you see Abdullah Issa, a 12-year-old Palestinian child who was beheaded 1 month before the picture of Omran Deknish went viral. He was not mourned by corporate media. The US State Department spent more time trying to defend the extremist group that decapitated this child. Who saves these children and who produces much of the storylines that the Western media runs with? Who is considered unimpeachable by the NATO-aligned media in the West?
And who will scream about the multiply 4,000, because that's how many pedophile priests the front for Joseph Ratzinger just greenlighted in Australia. That was from where Midnight Oil comes. Pope Benedict, Joseph Ratzinger, has scheduled a meeting with Italian President Giorgio Napolitano for Saturday, February 23rd, 2013, to discuss securing immunity from prosecution from the Italian government. According to Italian media sources, Ratzinger's meeting follows upon the delivery to the Vatican Secretary of State's office on February 6th of a diplomatic note from an undisclosed European government. The note apparently stated the intention of this government to cooperate with a high court in issuing an arrest warrant against Ratzinger, who resigned from his pontificate less than a week later. It had never happened before. On the eve of their conviction in a public tribunal for crimes against children, a pope serving and three other indicted Vatican officials resigned their offices, including the so-called Black Pope, respectively, Joseph Ratzinger, Tarcisio Bertoni, T-A-R-C-I-S-I-O, B-E-R-T-O-N-E, Sean Brady, and the Jesuit leader Adolfo Pacione. S-E-A-N is how you spell Sean. So I lost my train of thought again.
Whose stories are taken at face value with no diverging views, context, or fact-checking.
Oh, yeah, the context. So what are the three places the front man, the assassin-in-chief, goes? Well, it was Rome, Tel Aviv, and Riyadh. So these are the conspiring forces behind the Contra War. Of course, the predecessor, the guy who finally relented, but then they had to get rid of him, they didn't keep him alive forever like they were saying you had to do for everybody else, and said Cállate when Nicaraguans were saying Queremos Paz. So the Apostolica Anticomunista Alianza, or I got that sequence wrong, but the AAA in 1975 were behind a bunch of assassinations of leftists in Spain at the end of that dictatorship that ran from the 30s. And that is the same AAA in essence, because the one, the El Brujo, the George Papard character in real life, the BA character, Mr. T, is Almirón. So he's married to Perón's daughter, and actually Perón is in a relationship with the Juan Perón's widow, and she is not the the first Mrs. Perón. She is more of the Imelda Marcos of South America. And so for like a couple of years, under her watch, the head of the welfare agency that Evita, the FDR of South America, threatened to burn down the rich neighborhoods if, Argentina didn't kick down $1 billion a year for the poor. Descalzados. And my daddy walked to school without no shoes.
Who did the West pull when they need to demonize the Syrian government or the Syrian army? The White Helmets. Nominees for the Nobel Peace Prize 2 years running. Winners of the Oscar for the Netflix documentary, a documentary that was largely produced in Turkey with footage supplied by the White Helmets from inside Syria, so not authenticated. This organization is promoted, idolized, adulated universally through corporate media with no questions asked.
Even though they're idiot front murderers pretending to be doctors, do like 13 injections of atropine, which is it's to kickstart the dilates your pupils. The sarin is a cholinesterase inhibitor that leaves the acetylcholine neurotransmitter jammed in the on position in your vegetative system, which slows your breathing and heart rate down to zero. All you need to do is artificial respiration. So when they say, look, the baby's pupils are constricted, there's nothing we can do, these idiots are obviously not even paramedics, or they would know, okay, a dead baby has fixed and dilated pupils. Okay. I'm just a stupid CPR instructor, and I know that. Oh, back to Ben Lissabili. She's been there.
Can you press play on that? This is perhaps the version of the Netflix documentary that we really should have seen. Meets Muhammad Ali Pasha, a white helmet, in July, August 2016 in Aleppo, with Nusra Front fighters behind him.